Hi everybody, g'day. This is Camille Kajuri and I played Jackie Tyler in Doctor Who. And are you listening to Women Talk Sci-Fi?
Hi, this is Jerry Donaldson.
And this is Eugenia Stapira.
And welcome back to another episode of Women Talk Sci-Fi podcast.
Yay!
And we're going to talk about...
Ooh. Well, that wasn't very good, actually. That was more a ghost.
As opposed to a... Ooh!
That's better.
We could actually break into song here and go Werewolves of London.
We could.
But we're not going to, because I can't remember all the words. But you can look it up on YouTube. We're going to talk about werewolves today.
Yep.
And the reason we're going to talk about werewolves is we have werewolves.
We do. We have not one.
Not two.
Not three.
But four.
Well, actually three, because one of them isn't the werewolf.
One of them isn't the werewolf. But four people associated with the genre of werewolf.
I was driving in the car the other day and I was thinking about our podcast, about this particular one, thinking, you know, like Twilight really brought vampires back into vogue, really, after Buffy had finished.
I'm sorry, I can't call them vampires.
I know. But for some generation of the people.
I just can't call sparkly vampires as vampires.
And they also did bring sort of the werewolf, but made them a little bit more sexy than werewolves had ever been before.
Well, on the screen, I mean, there's lots of books out there if you actually go out and look in the fantasy world of fiction where werewolves are the sexy, strong thing. So there's always been that in the written form. But on television, you're probably right. And we were told they weren't werewolves.
No, that's true.
Somebody we were told us they were shapeshifters.
Yes.
Because they didn't have to wait to the full moon to actually... do stuff. But the ones we're talking about do actually have to wait to the full moon. So technically they really are werewolves.
And we are talking about Teen Wolf and An American Werewolf in London.
Which was an excellent movie for its time.
It was fantastic. And I've only just recently rewatched it. And I was amazed. And I think it was the forerunner to the whole makeup industry actually taking that next step up.
Well, it's actually quite old now because it came out in 1981.
Yeah, so... oh, it is.
Now we're here in 2018, which when you actually think of it, that's nearly 40 years ago.
Mm. No, it is quite a while ago.
And it was very good because it had a full body change is one of the scenes that were actually in there, which was quite amazing for its time.
It and still is amazing because when you watch it, you can't really see the difference. You know, like the chroma key and the whole thing is perfect. It hasn't lost... I mean, may have lost a little bit.
It's in the 80s. In its fashion. The clothes and the hairstyles are pretty crap.
But as far as the transformation is concerned, it hasn't lost any of its effectiveness.
It's a bit of its era in terms of the story. I mean, we have a ghost and we have a werewolf in it, that kind of thing. We're not going to worry about spoilers because it's 40 years old.
That's right. If you haven't watched it, well, you know.
You need to go and watch it. It was significant. It had fantastic theme song.
Yes.
As well, where we were rules in London. It's really quite disco-ish because it's of 1980s once again.
And any time I think of that song, I always think of the movie. Like, yep. They seem to go hand in hand for me. And for probably people of the era who watched it, those two things do go hand in hand.
And David Norton, whom we have the interview with, and he is, in fact, the werewolf of London,
mm-hmm.
the American werewolf of London, in fact. And I don't know whether he got stereotyped in it or not, or it was too famous for the moment.
It could have been.
Because you didn't see him in a lot of other things. Although no. He's been in some amazing movies.
He's been in movies, but he never, I don't think, had the cult following or even big headlining as he did in that particular movie.
Oh, no, and it was... A video from my youth, I would say. I think I could still watch it. One of those movies you can watch again and again. Every couple of years you can rewatch it and enjoy it.
Well, I hadn't actually seen it. I mean, I knew about it and I knew the song. No, until last year. I hadn't seen it. I always knew about it and I always knew the song. But I thought, I'd better sit down and watch this because we knew that we were going to have a possibility of meeting. Well, we knew that David would be there and whether we could get an interview with him. And then we found, well, wow, it is quite an interesting movie. For that time, it would have scared the living daylights out of people. It really would have, especially the ghost. The ghost who comes into it is the goriness of his makeup is quite something that would have shocked audiences of that time.
This is not a horror movie. This is...
It isn't.
A horror comedy
movie. It is a comedy. It's a very black comedy.
It's a very black comedy. So the elements of the ghost are quite...
Oh, they're funny. Yeah.
It's not meant to scare you. It's you want to sometimes just smack the ghost because he's irritating. But it is really quite interesting in terms of that. Where we have Teen Wolf, which is actually slightly more normalized, what we think of werewolves now.
Yes.
They're cute. Yes. They've got fantastic bodies and they can turn into wolves.
As opposed to the Teen Wolf movie that Michael J. Fox did.
That's almost a...
Well, that's a comedy too.
It was almost a parody of a werewolf.
It was, because he was, you know, he grew his hair and he was just looking like a big puppy, basically.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I think Jason Bateman might have done one as well, where he was another Teen Wolf with a similar sort of thing as Michael J. Fox.
I mean, there's also another movie that was in 1935 called A Werewolf of London. So werewolves are something that have been around for a long time, and we've got many, 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 many from the very cute, you know, sexy ones that were in Twilight.
Yes.
To David Norton's, who isn't a sexy werewolf.
No, he's quite a...
He's very much a horror werewolf as opposed to a sexy werewolf, as opposed to the comedic werewolf of Michael J. Fox and so on. And then Teen Wolf, we have the sexy again, but slightly more... I suppose violent than those that were in
a lot more violent and probably a little bit more towards the horror side of things too. So it's not, but it's in the same vein as Grimm and
90210.
Yeah,
except the hair. They haven't been to the the shop that stripped all the hair off. They still actually have it. So
and it's based at a school. So and they play lacrosse,
which is over some parts of America very, very, very. You know, obviously in depth. So they don't actually play American football. I think it would be unfair. Probably lacrosse is a sport they could get someone with slightly more super strength into, as opposed to knocking everybody down on the pitch as they run down playing football and or baseball and so on and that kind of stuff. Because you'd get a home run every time.
You would. But they did have to play down their superhero-ness a little bit when they're playing the game. It has an amazing following, Teen Wolf. I mean, it's finished now. It's 6 seasons, completed.
Well, it has.
Yes, this particular
run, they're becoming very British, aren't they, in their TV in America, where they actually stop things and then restart them again with another kind of Star Trek kind of thing, you know, that a different version of the same story. Because the rumour has it there is a new season of Teen Wolf coming out with some of the characters with a different setup, but some of those characters still retain.
Well, they can't stay at school any longer. They're getting a little bit long in the tooth,
I am looking away at the moment with my eyebrows drawn in a frown. But yes, you're right. You can't keep Teen Wolves as teenagers. We all grow up. But because it's in a town with parents, there is an opportunity to carry some of the characters over. And there's police and there's others and all those kind of teachers and so on. So the possibilities. So if you want to know what that is, go have to do a bit of research yourself because we don't want to...
Because Teen Wolf has got quite an involved, I guess, interwoven history of different things that comes into it. So there's a little bit of ancient culture. There's a little bit of made-up culture, of course. But it's quite intricate. Yeah, there's mythology. And there's characters that you know about that come into it, that you sort of have heard their names through other things, and so they've actually put them into the show. So it's to me it's not a Buffy.
No, but it's a 90210 with, in some ways, a bit of horror tucked in. So you have the American soap of teenagers and the angst and the relationships and all of those kind of things. As opposed to, I think sometimes Buffy didn't, although the relationships in it, there weren't very much a focus. Where finding vampires and finding other supernatural creatures was more the focus of Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
Where you have an ongoing, continuous story.
Well, you've got, certainly for the first couple of seasons, the whole story of the main character trying to find his place in the pack, you know, and then discovering that he is part of a werewolf culture and all that awakening. So you've got that growing up sort of
it's
stuff.
It's like a teenager. Wow.
Yeah, it is. It is, with a little bit more angst.
Yes. And teeth.
Yes. So that, and then it starts developing a bit more when they, and others start coming into the clan and the group, and so it starts being a bit more of a, less about the school situation and more about the group situation.
And more, less about fancying this girl or this boy.
Yes.
And those kind of things as they go through. Where Werewolf of London, American Werewolf from London, is very much more about finding yourself in a situation that you suddenly have to learn to deal with.
Yes, and but it is, there is a little bit of a love story in there as well.
There's always, you have to have a love story.
Yeah. Who's actually played by Jenny Akita, who has now at this present moment quite a large role in Call the Midwife. So
if they've ever watched that television show.
If they've
show.
Ever watched that television
She's
show.
She's from Logan's Run.
Yes.
For those who are sci-fi buffs, we'll
yes,
a
that's
sci-fi
true.
Show. Logan's Run, she was
the
actually
movie.
From that, the movie.
Yeah, with
so,
Michael York.
And she was in a few other things. If you're into children's movies, and you probably saw it, she was in The Railway Children.
That's
way back.
When she was a very young girl.
So she's been around in UK in particular, and other areas, obviously, for a long time. So she's got to the age now where she's playing nuns, as opposed to the beautiful woman that she was in her youth.
That's true.
So American Werewolf of London was challenging in terms of, it was something that we didn't see normally on television.
I don't think we'd ever seen, I mean, we'd seen transformations of people into werewolves, but you could see almost the different phases happening in as their faces got hairier
like
and everything.
Stop-start photography yeah. kind of thing, yeah.
Whereas this, A, he didn't blend into a hairy monster. He really blended into more of
a wolf creature. Yeah.
And the transition is flawless. It is absolutely flawless. And it's just incredible. As I said, I'm still amazed by how good it holds up.
And on that note, let's do the interviews because there are four of them for this one.
This
so
is true.
It's going to take a few minutes.
It will.
The first is David Norton.
Yes, who played the American in An American Werewolf in London. And then we have three people who played characters from Teen Wolf. So our second recording of interviews is Dylan Sprayberry and Kaylin Rambo, who played Liam and Mason. And it was great to have them together because on the show, they're very good friends in the show.
And they're nut jobs.
Oh, they're friends outside
too. They're phonetic young men who were amazingly running around like young men.
You need to follow them on Snapchat and Facebook because they put these little
videos
that they make all over the place, usually with one lying on the ground after he's fallen and done six somersaults.
Been beaten up or whatever. It was just, I have never seen so much energy in my life.
It was. They were like young pups, weren't they?
They were young werewolves, as in pup werewolves. Our third recording is with
Ryan Kelly, who plays Jordan Parrish, who's
the copper.
And he was lovely.
He was lovely too. He's very cute. Very nice. I liked him.
I liked him.
He was good fun. We got to spend the day with the two young pup werewolves and a slightly older Ryan Kelly, who would just look at it them with amazement and say they were like this all the time they were on the set. He realised that even though he was only in his 30s, he was getting a lot older. the teenage and the young 20-year-old. So it was great fun.
It was great fun.
And we would like in particular to thank our friend, Scotty Liston from First Contact Conventions, who allowed us to spend not only the day with him, but interview all the guys as well.
Yes, and he also provided us with the interview with David Norton as well, because he's also part of AMC Expo.
And you can catch him at?
firstcontactconventions.com.au and amcexpo.com.au.
How are you?
I'm good.
Okay. Look, you get your
We've got everything.
Devices.
Every kind of device on this earth. But you had amazing devices way back in London when you turned into a werewolf.
I did. Well, I had makeup. I had Rick Baker hounding me, with no pun intended.
No pun intended.
Yes. Pun intended.
Well, I only watched it the other week because I thought I'd better refresh my memory about the movie. And it still lives up to it today.
I think part of the fun of that, I mean, obviously, the oldest thing about it are the actors now, you know. But the thing itself, you know, with London as a backdrop, mm-hmm. it's a city that never changes.
Changes, yeah.
And so you could go there now, or you look at it on film now and say, you know, what's really changed about New York or London? You look at the marquees, of course, in Piccadilly. Those things have changed. But overall, I think that's what keeps the movie sort of timely.
Well, the only things that changed are the hairstyles.
Hairstyles.
From the time.
And the colors.
And the colors.
As I said, the only things that are, you know, really aged in the film are the actors themselves. Here we are 35 years later, but we're talking about it in Australia. It's pretty exciting.
Well, it was quite an iconic movie when it came out, but it was also very different to what was
normal. Yes.
So did you know that when you read the script the first time, you thought, oh, it's just a horror movie?
No, I mean, I really was taken by the fact that it was a really good story. It was sort of a tragedy in the sense of that the heroes, you know, had tragic flaws and that they were going to be overcome by the problem. It just so happened he was going to be turning into a werewolf. But I always looked at it as a character with like a terminal illness, and he was in denial about whether or not this was going to be something he could survive. And that was just sort of to help sort of process the whole character development. But no one really knew. And initially, you know, when it came out, our reviews were not particularly. Critics didn't know how to review it. Going, no, is it a comedy? Is it a horror film? And John Lennon says, it's a horror film. Yeah, and it's funny, but that's life. And was unapologetic about it. And, you know, it's been more accepted over the years where films try to copy that same sort of idea.
Well, it's a cult classic now.
I know. I'm always in the classic movie section when I come to the shows.
It's actually better to be in that than the cheap bin down the corner.
I know, exactly. So I have no complaints. I'm happy to be here. Thank you. Thank you,
so that way we can keep on promoting their movie as well.
We need some promotion. 25 years old.
No, you don't. Actually, it's a fantastic. It is a fantastic movie. And it literally is a classic.
Thank you.
And I have watched it many times, so
it's okay.
You're still in my heart.
Well, I still think the actual makeup part of it, the transformation, is flawless. Like,
yeah,
it really is one of
Rick
the best
Baker
things
was,
you've ever seen. You know, and
it was, and at the time, yeah, it was,
and still is.
It holds up, I think. Yeah. No doubt about it. I just think about how long it took, you know, and I go, yeah, I know. It was so tedious. You imagine 10 hours a day in a makeup chair for 6 days? Well, this is 2 minutes. Anyway, nobody wants to hear me complain.
Oh, yeah, we do. We do. Hey, welcome. Thanks, guys, for doing an interview with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yes. So you've been acting basically from quite a young age, haven't you? So what's it like growing up in the industry? Sort of, what are some of the pitfalls that you find, both of you?
Well, you know, it's funny because it's like different but similar for us, I guess. Kylan's from California, so he's always lived there. Right, you were born in Santa Clarita, right?
Well, yeah, I was born in Los Angeles.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, it was just like always around. Yeah, but you can continue.
No, you can explain.
Yeah, for me, it was just like always around. So it wasn't like the other kids that, you know, they have always wanted to do this and had such a deep inspiration to do it that they moved from where they live to go to this place. It was always next to me. So I didn't necessarily have the same drive, like from day one, I've always wanted to be an actor. It was just something that I fell into, and then I was like, oh, I like this. So mine was a little different. It's kind of like, I feel, it's rare for most actors to be from Los Angeles, which is different.
It is actually really rare. It's it was just easy access for you, pretty much. Like,
it was an option.
Exactly. It's like just another job you could try to.
I wasn't good at
pursue.
Sports, and I literally was like, let me try doing this modeling thing, and then it went over into acting.
Yeah.
Because I actually realized I identified more with the people, the kinds of people. Most of my best friends are actors. And I don't know if it's just because of the way that we think or the way that we behave, but we're all very different, weird. We just get along.
Because did you know each other before you started on Teen Wolf?
Yeah, it's a small world, so you know of each other, but we became like brothers like because of the show. Mm.
And yes, tell us about the few things that you do together, not on the show.
We've seen it here.
Just explain some of the things that you like doing, especially some of the things you probably did on set.
They made a short film in the toilets.
Yeah, we just did
which,
that.
They've
yeah.
posted to Instagram, so yeah. if you ever actually want to have a look, go see.
Yeah, it's like only going to be there for 24 hours.
Well, we might, but we saved it, so yeah, we do some kind of like collage videos.
Re-bring it back.
We'll bring it back.
Visit to Australia.
Yeah. Yeah, we should. We actually can release it. We could like make something and do it whenever they put this out.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I guess, I don't know. We usually like, it's kind of that thing of, I feel like that's how most dudes get into, like males in particular get into acting, because it's like, well, I'm not good at sports, so I have limited options in terms of like what you do in high school and like, you know, middle school, that kind of stuff. So like, same thing for me, when I was a kid, I was terrible at sports. So like the other option was to like try some theater, like modeling, like that kind of stuff. And it just kind of stuck with me more.
Is it a very American thing for school kids, where you've got jocks and you've got others?
Yeah, it's very like it can get very stereotypical. It's kind of, I feel like it's actually, I don't know. I don't know if it's getting better or not, because I'm not in school anymore.
Yeah, I know for myself, I did not thrive in high school. It was not my scene.
I did not thrive.
Yeah, because it was just,
I was starving.
Maybe it was just because like the area, the specific high, no, it wasn't, because I went to multiple high schools, but they were just very clicky. I think that's fine. Yeah, they were just very clicky, and you know, races would hang out with a specific race.
Yeah,
like,
so groups would hang out with groups.
You know, and that's
clicky
not,
as we
that's a public. Yeah, that's more of a public school thing.
Yeah, it was a public school thing, and I wish I went to a creative arts kind of school, because that was more my scene, and it was more creative people can see past that, or not even see past that. It was just there was a cool group of people and then a not cool group of people, and it's just that's not what I think is even a thing. So high school never was my scene. I more so had friends that were actors. We would all hang out separately, but it's different if you went to like a private performing arts school or something.
Oh, well, I went, like, my school was very interesting, and like in the fact that it was a school for actors, artists, musicians, like kids in the business. So it was like a performing arts business school, if that makes sense. So like,
Fame.
So like, yeah, Fame. So like we did, well, not like Fame, because the thing is we didn't learn any, we didn't have any extracurricular activities or any arts programs. We just had all the base core, like the things that we needed to get to college. That's all we studied. So like,
so they let you audition and all that.
Yeah, so like I had three classes a day.
Yeah.
And I got out at 1 o'clock, 1:45 every day.
It was centered around you to focus on your career.
So I can actually try to do it, not learn about it.
Oh, okay.
So
right.
It's a very practical school.
That's a very practical,
an academic school.
Exactly.
My school, actually, that was a big problem for me, and I ended up just being homeschooled because my teachers ended up hating me because I would like have an audition and that would actually take precedence. Like, I would get good grades so I can have a work permit, so I can audition. So school wasn't necessarily the primary thing, and if I had an audition at 2 o'clock, I would definitely leave school early. And I didn't have a school where they were like as understanding as Dylan.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so it's, I ended up having to pick one, and I just picked homeschool. And when you book a film or something, like, you have to be homeschooled, and I just ended up staying that way.
Yeah.
So how did you audition for Teen Wolf? What was the process you had to go through?
For me, I pretty much had auditioned for another character, I think maybe months prior to my audition for the Liam character. I auditioned for young Derek. What's Derek's last name in the show? Hale. I auditioned for young Derek Hale. And I was just a little too young at the time for it. Like, they needed some, like, intimate moments with a girlfriend character, and they just didn't think I was ready for that, to play that. So fair enough on that, and I'm actually happy that I didn't get that role.
Because that was only a couple episodes, wasn't it?
I think it was one
episode.
They brought him back, like, a season later for one episode. Which was a cool storyline, but I definitely like mine a lot more.
and for a lot longer.
Exactly.
And a lot more money. So it works out.
So I guess it pretty much all around worked out. So I had like a bunch of auditions for that particular role, which is funny, because I came back maybe 3 months, 4 or 5 months, somewhere in there later, and then auditioned for Liam. And I had one audition. And it was actually funny, because I walked in and it was straight to the producers with like Jeff Davis, the creator, all the producers, and then Tyler Posey and Dylan O'Brien. So it was like, and it was, that was pretty like nerve wracking, having everybody in there for the first time auditioning for this character. And then I walk in and I see my friend Mason auditioning for the same character, who wasn't even my friend, wasn't my friend at the time.
What?
Which you guys don't know, my friend Mason Dye was on the show as another character, and we became like, you know, he's another one of like my brothers pretty much through the show, but I didn't even know him when I auditioned, and I walked in and I saw him, which was really funny. So I saw him and like one other kid that I knew, and I had the audition, and then I can't exactly remember like how long until I found out, but it was not very long at all. It was like a couple of days until I found out that I had gotten it. So it was like fairly easy. And I talked about this actually when we were in Melbourne with some other fans. They asked me about this, and I just kind of said that I think having O'Brien and Posey, you know, there helped me a lot more than it didn't. Like, I thought I was going to be super nervous, and like having them there and them being so welcoming to me, and actually me being able to like relate to them very well, as like they're just like, you know, kind of, they were just coming out of being like young kids, you know what I mean? At that time they were like 22, I think.
And, well, they kicked the crack pad of you in the first episode, exactly. So you need to get to know them quite well.
Exactly, and just having them there like really made me a lot more comfortable, and I think actually helped me book the role in a way, because I had, not having them there, I was super nervous walking in. So that was pretty sick. And how did you audition for it? Because you auditioned, didn't you audition like pretty close around the same time that I did?
Yeah, well, I knew he booked Teen Wolf. Like, it was kind of spreading around our friend group. Like, yo, did you hear that Dylan's going to be on MTV? And I was like, yeah, it's crazy. And it's just like right after I just met him. And then I get this audition. It's kind of crazy because I get the audition notice, and it's like in the pilot, that's my audition scene, and I was like, oh heck yeah, and I'm reading for Scott when my audition is supposed to read for Styles.
Mm-hmm.
So for the first half of my night, I'm actually preparing the wrong role, and then like I realize like, oh crap, like they want me to read for Styles, like, oh, okay, that's easier, like, so I can do that, because I actually relate to that spazzy kind of thing. I'm actually am like that in a way. So
a bit nerdy, bit,
yeah,
sort of.
Yeah. Like I could, yeah, so I could just do that pretty simple. And it actually took some ease off of me, but I didn't sleep that whole night. Like I was just like up all night, and I was rehearsing those lines over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And I finally, like that day, I did them. And I went in the audition and I did the scene, and I did not feel like it was like a good job at all.
How you feel. Most,
yeah,
of the time.
It, like it wasn't like I nailed it. Like I didn't feel like I nailed it, but I didn't feel like I did a terrible job or anything. But it just like didn't. I just did it as best as I could, and they told me like that day, like, hey, like we want to work with you, and you know, come to set and just see what it's like. And I was like, are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, let's do it. And then I went to set, and I actually met Holland, and I met O'Brien, and they were so nice. And I think that was the main, almost like I was nodding my head, because when Dylan said, like, and he met the other Dylan and Posey, it made him more comfortable. When I was like kind of, I've never played a gay character. So my reservations were not playing the role, but if I could do it well. Like, I didn't know if I could.
You didn't want to be camp, so to speak, as opposed to just a person.
Yeah, and I didn't want to, like, you know, accept the role, and I didn't know what I was capable of, you know? And I was fairly young, and I grew up in a very, like, even my town, not my family, but even my town, like, they were just so far behind, man. You know, they were, what I mean by that is just...
Socially...
Yeah, socially devolved as people, you know, mm-hmm. Like they had a lot of hate, you know, towards a lot of different people, and being gay was one of them. And that's just like having those thoughts in the back of your head, like that was an added thing I had, but I wanted to do the character because I knew like this is gonna be a fun role, it's gonna be a challenge. And so once I went on set and I just realized, like, I just had this feeling like this is definitely something that I need to do, and I did it, and I'm super thankful for it, you know. But it's weird. I had one audition. It was the only audition, and they just, like, Jeff, I remember leaving set, he was like, please take the job. was like, what? Okay, yeah, I'll take the job. Sure. The creator of Teen Wolf asked me to take the job, so I'm going to do it.
Did you realize that there was such a strong base, fan base, and also that you'd be involved in things like conventions? Is that something that you had an understanding of?
Not cross my mind.
Not at all.
Like, I thought, I knew Teen Wolf was huge. Like, I had a friend, and I'll never forget this. We were outside skating. Long, hard day of skating.
Wait, who?
My friend Anthony. You know, you never met him. Yeah. Me and Jelani were skating. And we were going to go to the movies. And this kid goes to the Jelani's house, my other friend, and we're getting ready to go. And he's like, oh, what time is it? Oh, dude, I'm so sorry, bro. Teen Wolf is on. And he grabs his skateboard and he sprints home. He's just running home. We're like, are you kidding me? Like, that must be a dope show. Like, we didn't watch it at the time, but then once I got on the show, that was a little glimpse of like the fandom that I got. And mm-hmm. I actually, once I was on the show, he was the first person that texted me and was like, bro, you have no idea how crazy this is going to be for you. I didn't know about the fandom, but once, yeah, I found
out. Do you still talk to him at all?
Yeah, I see him at the gym where I live.
Oh, yeah, you told me that.
Yeah. What about you?
What about you, Dylan? Did you know about people, when they embrace fantasy or sci-fi, that they really embrace it?
Yeah, it's a different, it's not the same as, you know, 90210 kind of thing, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
People watch the show, but they don't watch the show the same way.
Well, like, it's like fantasy just provides like a whole different universe that you can really enter into and kind of lose yourself in. So I feel like that's why people get so like attached to it, because it provides like a whole like escape. But I had no idea, like, I'd never even known about, like, conventions like this.
You've never been to one yourself before in any other kind of way?
Comic-Con is the closest we've been to.
But I had never gone to Comic-Con.
To San Diego Comic-Con?
No,
you went
to a convention for Superman. You went to Comic-Con for Superman, and I went to...
Yeah, but that was participants, not as fans.
Not as fans. Oh, okay, yeah, that's what you guys are. Okay.
That's what I'm talking about.
I thought.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. But you've been as actors in shows, but not as such. So you weren't in this kind of world of knowing what people were like.
No.
Even the Star Trek, so old, you know, dress up. And,
yeah, no, I've seen them, but I never was a part of it.
Is it intimidating for a young actor to be so loved, so to speak, by a group of people?
Just girls crying in front of you.
That part is actually a little weird. Just not weird because it's just a little
weird,
but it's just
strange,
like,
but weird isn't.
Because I say it's weird because I don't think of myself the way that they think of me.
Yeah.
You know, they see me as a different being than I really am, and sometimes that is helpful to have someone to look up to, but also at the same time, you know, I'm flesh and bone just like them. So it's when you really think about it as an actor, it's sometimes I'm thankful that I get to make someone's day, but it almost feels like it's undeserved. It's almost like I didn't do much, you know. I'm not who you think I am, but I appreciate that you can feel that way because of me. But I know it's not like I'm this special being that's like making all these people, you know. I know it's just more so for them. It's almost cathartic, is that the word?
Yeah, cathartic.
Cathartic, yeah, it's almost for them.
So you have to balance that.
Yeah.
Is that something that you have to learn? To balance the person with the character?
You know, being young, and, you know, when I at first didn't have that realization, and it's easy to kind of get sucked in that trap with social media, and people tell you, like, oh, you're just the best, we love you, and you can really read into that and really believe that. And when I was young, that was kind of like my source for a second. That was my source of confidence, and that's when it starts to go bad. But you learn sometimes through hardships, sometimes, or you know, you just learn by getting older or something, and then you realize like it's not all about you. Like you can. Yeah. I feel like the smart ones, the people that I hang out with, they're humble in that sense. They're not seeking that because that's not your worth. We all understand that. But there's a lot of people that don't understand that.
It's also like, thinking about it now, it's like kind of like a defense mechanism in a way of like, you know, you have all these people saying, oh, you're the best, I love you, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, they're saying that on one hand because they think that they know you, like, based on your character, right?
Yeah.
And, like, what they see, and it's like, that is a part of you. They do know that part of you, but they don't know the whole part of you.
Yeah.
So it's like, you don't know, like, me as a person fully, and I can't accept like all of the praise you're giving me because exactly. one day this might not be the same. Like I might not be this relevant. I might not be this or that. Yeah. So I can't go to this as my sense of confidence, like right. you said, because what if I don't have it at some point?
Yeah.
It's like I might not know how to be a motivated, positive person if right. I don't have all these people saying I love you, which is like why you can't, you know, you can appreciate it and you can give them respect and you can you know, be kind and you both actually have the same interests. You know, you both like TV and movies, and that's what you both share.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like you have that common interest and you have that connection, but it's like I can't let your love affect me like that because you might not always have it. So it's like it's really weird and like kind of like a, like I'm thinking about it now, a defense mechanism, even
so
for me.
Do you plan then for the future? Say you've obviously come to an understanding that it's fantastic now, but tomorrow it could be different.
Yeah,
so do
change.
You actually plan within your head about whether you want to direct, you want to write,
music,
or do you have to diversify your whole career in a way to make sure you're still relevant? Do you know what I mean?
Exactly Well, this kid does music. I feel like the beauty of the thing that I've found out that is I'm not an actor. Like, that's something that I do.
Yep.
But if I define myself as that one thing, or anyone, I feel like if anyone defines themselves as their occupation, you're limiting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So you should just follow whatever is inspiring to you or whatever you want to do. And that's always the thing. Because I know that acting, I could easily do this 50 years or I could easily do this just for one more year and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I gotta not censor myself. So if I feel like writing, there's been times where I've felt like just picking up music, you know, but it's not because like, all right, well, I might not get a job, so maybe I would be the best musician to make money. It's just more so, you know, if you follow what you're passionate about, that the money comes, everything, it just supports you. So you just got to stay on that.
And it's interesting because there's different kinds of like actors and musicians and other artists, you know what I mean? We have an interesting group of people where most of us are kind of like on a journey in a way. Like, you know, don't get me wrong, we do need to make money to stay alive, but to live comfortably, to eat, to support our families, all that kind of stuff. So we need the money, but at the end of the day, we're really interested in how far we can push our limits in terms of creativity and
creative.
Mental expansion and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's what we care about at the end of the day. It's like, you know, I don't ever think about I need to be in a band because it's going to make me money. It's like, no, I think that could really open my mind up to different things and take me different places, and, you know, I can experience things that I might not ever experience if I don't do it.
Because you both have a passion for writing too, don't you?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And is that something you'd want to pursue as well, maybe write scripts or be involved in filmmaking?
Well, particular type of writing, whether it's scripting or whether it's actually fiction. Or
I actually... it's interesting, like, I'm not even, like, tooting my horn or anything like that. I just feel like there's certain things that you know that you're supposed to do.
Yep.
And writing is something that I know I'm supposed to do.
Yep.
But it's a matter of harnessing that talent and making it something that is, like, good. Because you can have this crazy amount of talent, but if it's crazy and all over the place, it's really not helpful. So I honestly think, like, having other creative people is the best thing for me, because we always spitfire ideas for so many things, like, all the time. Like, when I come up with a new story, he's, like, one of the first people I tell. But, yeah, I definitely can see us writing and actually profiting from it, because we do have very good ideas.
You know? So are your little video clips, is that part of your creativity sort of coming out, or is it just sheer fun?
Honestly, like, it's just a creative way to have fun.
Yeah, like, I feel like the way I see it is, like, for both of us, is that's just a way to just release some of that creative energy.
It's like a little exhaust.
Yeah, we just have to just, like, get it out, because we're always like that.
Yeah.
And that's just us recording just how we are.
Or it's like, well, today, honestly, like, I was writing, like, music in the hotel, and I didn't bring my guitar with me, which I wish I would have, so I could have kept writing, but I had, like, this creative itch.
Yeah.
So, like, just doing something dumb like that, where we kind of, like, we were honestly like little directors where we were just like, we should get all these shots first. We need to do these shots real quick. And, you know, so it's like, but it was like a fun little thing that was kind of like a creative outlet that we just got out really fast. And like, actually, I kind of felt like
we do that often.
I know.
But it's just without the camera.
So in Teen Wolf, did the writers see that in the two of you? And so maybe played off that a little bit more in the series?
You know, they found out. They actually... Not as much in the series. No, I'm not going to say not as much in the series, because there, most of the scenes we were together, we had very good chemistry, and that's what everyone said and raved about. But I feel like we really thrived is when they have us, you know, tag teaming, like the Snapchat takeovers, or like we would do skits behind the scenes, like after show.
They would always have us prepared. Like when we did after show. Yeah. Like really when.
Yeah, that's when they knew like we were just a bunch of goofballs.
So, because that's something new, isn't it, too, where shows get a chance to talk about the show afterwards.
Yeah.
And it's actually, like, a rising, like... Or like
rising genre
of, like, Talking Dead. Like, I actually did Talking Dead.
Well, even the new Star Trek that's just come out has got
a Trek talk,
exactly.
That kind of thing.
Cool.
Especially for those kind of, like, really big franchises, it is important to kind of have that because, you know... It's been around long enough, and it's gained enough traction where they do deserve like a discussion afterwards.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Do you think kids do that more these days? Generation actually discuss things more, because it seems to be a very current thing. I mean, and even I have to say, my daughters and they actually talk about what's happening in the show much more.
Yeah,
and talk about it socially and talk about, you know.
I'm not gonna lie. The only thing is, I realize how small of a bubble I live in Los Angeles, so I can't say for everyone, because LA is a very specific place, and the things that we value, like the things that's on our news, is not on everyone else's news. So
it's a very liberal state, isn't it?
Yeah. And we value it just like celebrities and everything. But I think...
Really?
All those red carpets.
For the most part, the people that I hang around, you know, they'll talk about Game of Thrones, they'll talk about Breaking Bad, they'll talk about, you know, the most popular show, and discuss it fully. Yeah. I think most of my friends, like, we like movies, and discussing is probably our biggest thing. That's what makes us friends, is conversing.
Yeah.
So, like, we do have deep discussions, but I don't know if it's everyone that has such deep discussions about, you know, movies or actors or TV.
Well, those things like the after-show talk, you know, things seem to be indicating that that's the way people like to talk about things these days. Do you see yourselves working towards directing or producing? Because obviously it's something that you're both liking to do in your own little way now. Is that a future thing?
I mean, we've definitely discussed, like, doing our own projects together and, like, working on stuff like that. It's just kind of finding the...
slight distraction.
I know. Like,
an Australian bug enters the scene. What kind is it?
It looks like
Well, as long as it's not a spider, you'll be fine.
No, most spiders. Oh, it's so tiny. Like, it's like... It's bloody mozzie.
Yeah.
Mosquito to those who are...
Bloody mozzie. Just wallop it.
What were we talking about?
Producing and directing.
Oh, producing and directing. Yeah, no. We've definitely talked about, you know, working on stuff together, writing stuff, and then making it. And it's just one of those things of, like, I don't know, like, kind of just, it's like, I feel like for us to be directors, we kind of just have to start doing it. You know what I mean? Like, because we luckily are already in the industry, so we have, like, some access to knowledge of that kind of stuff, so... I feel like we could almost do it without going to school for it, you know what I mean? But we have to just start on a path of, like, making smaller projects and making each one better from there, and then building up our... But that's, like, you have to commit to that, so it's, like...
There's lots of web series these days, and lots of actors are creating their own work.
Like, that's probably the way I'm going to go once I really want to start focusing on directing, is, like, starting some kind of, like, little web series thing, working that, you know, then writing other things and doing short films and... Eventually building the stories and, you know, building up traction as a director that way.
You're still very young, so just 30 years ahead, aren't you? You know, really.
Yeah.
As you say, you'll be a year in 19, that would be it for the rest of it. Because you want to change your focus, your direction.
Yeah. Exactly. And there's, you know, I think everyone's different. You know, some people want to get, they want to learn something, study it, and then do that the rest of their life. The rest of their life. And that's completely okay. That's a specific life path to take, and that's the way that some people want to do it. And then some people kind of, like, meander, which is, like, usually what the way that artists and, like, people kind of similar to us tend to lean towards. Like, I feel like on and off we'll be doing acting for the rest of our lives, but in between we're going to be
doing other things, yeah. Mm.
I feel like at some point I'll be in France, you know, doing some kind of photography thing, you know, like, I don't know where I'm going to be in the next 15 years, and that's kind of exciting to me. Where some people are like, ah, that's, I don't want
to. By the way, there. Photo shoot, very nice.
Photo shoot.
The photo shoot you did.
Which one?
Oh, you probably
done
more
than one. The new one.
The new one.
Oh, thank you, I appreciate it.
Yeah,
that.
Very
I
nice.
I thought you meant the one that I took. I was like,
no, no, the one that you it. Were in.
Oh, thank you, yes. No, that
she's
was...
talking about her art. Not yours. She had a good time with her eyes.
Very nice model shots.
Oh, thank you.
But is that something too, going in at it? Because I think you started in modeling too, didn't mm-hmm. you? With
yeah, that was
going
like,
in and out of.
Yeah, I was on like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle boxes. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, just like.
So we're both making Ninja Turtles, are we?
Yeah.
No. I don't think I would ever go back into modeling as like a full on profession.
Yeah, no,
like,
I would want to.
If, like. You know, if they're like, oh, we want you to take this because you're on the show, or like that reason.
Okay,
if it's like
just
a side
off job, yeah.
Exactly, like I'll do that, but I'm just not interested in having modeling as like its standalone career. You know what I mean? Because it's a very specific way to do. And I honestly hate auditioning, and all of modeling is about auditioning.
Really,
and just, so is acting too, but.
But at least you're using your mind in some ways as opposed to just one portion of yourself.
Yeah.
In modeling, it's very. Isn't it stylized?
Yeah.
Where acting, you have to show your whole self.
So how hard is it for you? Because, again, you're quite young in the industry. Being involved in a show for 3 years or so and having, you know, a regular paycheck and regular work, and then suddenly it's all gone and
yeah.
you've got to start from scratch.
Yeah, that's... I feel like that's
awful.
It is. It's definitely a very uncomfortable feeling, but it's like it goes back to... I feel like this is the part where it determines whether this is something that you really want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is, then you know that your role is out there and it's on the way. It's just getting through the uncomfortability of like not being able to be on a set. Like you kind of can get addicted to being on a set.
Because you become a family, don't you, just
yeah.
about, especially
and
on Teen Wolf.
It becomes an environment that is so fruitful for you creatively, just as like a person, as a businessman, you learn so much. You can get really stimulated being around all those people. So it's something that you look forward to, but that those gaps in between, that's like where I feel me and Cody and Christian were just talking about it. That's where I feel like it is really where the hard work is involved. Because being on set, we're never really working hard. Even those 18-hour days, it's not like hard work. We're actually, even though we're complaining, even though we say we want to go home, we're still enjoying it. There's still something that is satisfying us of doing that. But the hard work is when you can't do that. And when you're auditioning and they tell you no, because they say no. Or, you know, because they had someone else in mind. So going through that is disheartening if you don't. Just keep at it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the most challenging part. Because it's like you have a big period of waiting time hoping that you're gonna get a job, so once you do, it doesn't even matter. You know, it doesn't matter how hard the job is, it doesn't matter because
yeah.
you've been waiting this long to
yeah.
get it. You've been getting mentally like abused pretty much, like
yeah.
you know, I thought well when I did Man of Steel when I was you know, I think I booked it when I was 13.
Yes, we have Clark Kent
yes.
here,
Clark
sitting
Kent.
With us.
Yes. Hello.
As well as a ninja
turtle.
Turtle and a werewolf. So I did Man of Steel when I was 13, and then I had 2 years where I didn't work. So I got that taste of being on a big set and being treated like a real actor and, you know, being taken care of and, like, you know, just all the stuff that you really dream about as an actor.
Yeah.
You know, I got it firsthand, like, it was a huge set, one of the most professional, fun, like just epic kind of things I've ever done. And you know, then you don't work for 2 years. I didn't work for 2 years after that, so it's like, you know, this career really puts you to the test. And it kind of, you know, it's
rejection
like,
is a,
it's like,
a common thing, isn't
can
it?
Can you handle not,
yeah.
you know, getting to do what you want to do for 2 years? Do you want to keep trying it? It's like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I do.
And it's like, I've been in the industry for like 11 years.
Same.
But like, I feel like I was passionate about it and really in it for like 5 to 6 years.
Yeah.
But the other ones, I was a kid, and it was, like I said, it was an option. So it was always
a game.
Just something you did.
Like, it could happen, and I'll try to be good at it, you know, but ultimately, like, but then once I got a taste of being on set, we had a very similar thing. Like, I was on Ender's Game, and
you were too, yes.
Yeah, it was like the first huge thing that I've ever gotten to be a part of.
Well, Harrison Ford. Yeah, I mean, how huge can you get?
It was insane, and you know, doing stunts, and we went to like, just did a lot of things that I didn't expect that actors even go through. Like,
mm-hmm.
I went through like boot camp. And like military training, and
And you would have done a lot of green screen stuff too.
It was a green room. It was like the entire place was green, and we were on wires. It was everything I wanted as like action film, everything. And then, I didn't have like a gap yet. I got on Teen Wolf, and now my gap has started. So I remember having a gap for like when I first started, and I didn't book anything for like 5 years. But then once I booked, I just started to next role. This is like probably the longest gap. But it's not, now that I've matured so much on the set, I'm not afraid, you know, because, you know, I just know that this is something I love to do. It's gonna happen.
Well, the beauty is the fan base for Teen Wolf will follow you. You know, whatever you go into,
they've been awesome.
They'll be interested in it.
I mean, like, we're working right now. Meeting them, so that's awesome. Like the fans have been probably one of the, I'm just actually too grateful for, because not actually undeserving, because they're the reason why I've traveled across the country, you know, and around the world.
It's a long way over here.
Yeah. Not even country. I'm in the world. Yeah, that's what I meant to say. Yeah. But yeah,
it's all right. American mentality is fine.
Exactly.
We all know. The World Series will happen.
Well, if you talk to some of the actors like J.R. Byrne, who've been, you know, that he's come across from Stargate, for instance, in terms of you know, fan base and fan events. So it's sort of, this is just, you know, his time on Teen Wolf just doubled him down in terms of, you know, fans that want to see him at events. And so as soon as you get a few of those under your belt,
another sci-fi show.
Retirement income, basically.
Retirement plans are pretty good with sci-fi. Yeah.
And on that note, thank you very much for spending some time with us
today.
Thank you.
What did that guy do when we...
Oi, oi, oi. Aussie, oi.
Something like that.
It was weird.
Where was that?
It was in Melbourne, but it was this long-haired musician guy.
You're from over there.
What?
I wasn't on stage. I wasn't in the main room, so.
We make funny noises. We just say.
Yippee! No, we met a guy outside on the street playing music, and we complimented him. And we were like, dude, that was so great. And he was like, thanks. And he was leaving, and he went,
old
yowie
thing that used to be from the 1950s radio.
Oh, I don't know.
Maybe it's just something. But that is a Hawaiian thing as well, but it depends on which signal he was giving.
When they used it, cooey.
That's kind of what it sounded like.
It's cooey. 1950s.
Skippy.
So funny.
Skippy.
All right, there is one other thing we'd like you to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you could do a promo for our show, it would be great. So you can... Here's your script.
We've got new scripts. You don't have to
make. So this is how you just say, hello, I am. I played in... And
okay. Okay. Sick? Mm-hmm. Is he on already?
Yep.
Oh, sweet. You guys are on it. Hey, this is Dylan Sprayberry. I played on Teen Wolf, and you are listening to Women Talk Sci-Fi.
Try it. So I played your character.
Gotcha. Fuck.
I played on
Teen Wolf. They had monkey bars and slides.
Toilets, too.
And toilets.
All right, here we go. I got it. Hey, this is Dylan Sprayberry. I played Liam on Teen Wolf, and you are listening to Women Talk Sci-Fi.
Terrific. And can you do Clark Kent as well?
Yes. Hey, this is Dylan Sprayberry. I played young Clark Kent in Man of Steel, and you are watching... You're not watching anything, because this is a talk show.
You were listening? Just you were listening. Well, out of here.
Yeah.
And you are listening to Women Talk Sci-Fi.
You know you're occurring in our outtakes episode, don't you?
Okay, cool.
And you don't think you're getting away with it.
No.
Hey, what's going on, guys? This is Kylan Rambo. I've played Mason in Teen Wolf, and you are listening to Women Talk Sci-Fi.
And you can do Ender's Game.
Ender's Game.
You know your character,
he said,
remember?
Dink.
Yeah.
I don't know why I knew that.
I don't know either. Hey, guys, this is Kylan Rambo. I played Dink in Ender's Game, and you are listening to Women Talk Sci-Fi.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Can I grab Kylan before he goes on stage? Is that gone?
You've got 10 minutes.
Oh.
Ooh, it's hard.
If you're not busy.
You'll need to go and...
So, Ryan, you've come from a fairly big family. Did you get into acting
14,
to get away from?
14!
14 siblings. No, I got into acting. Well, I didn't. I mean, my parents got me into acting as a way to, like, a head start in terms of paying for college. Obviously, with 14 kids, they can't afford to put that many kids through expensive college. So, that's how it started. And I bit my parents in the butt and didn't go to college. Continue acting. Was not their plan.
That worked out.
Was not their plan.
It wasn't their plan.
Because you started at a very early age, didn't you?
I did. I mean, I was right when I was a baby. I started doing print work and, you know, like Huggies commercials. Huggies.
I was thinking,
you
know, nappies.
Yeah, stuff like that. So my older siblings did it, and by the time I was born, it was already a family name, and, you know, I had agents and representation that knew we were well-behaved kids that looked younger than we actually were.
And from then on in, did you actually develop a want of acting?
Yeah. I mean, most of my childhood was my parents pushing me along with me enjoying it. Like, I enjoyed it, but, like, you're a kid, so, you know, at certain times, I'm sure if I committed to a commercial, there's that, I'd much rather have been playing soccer with my friends or something like that. So there was definitely, my childhood was my parents not forcing me. They were never stage parents, but, you know, they were pushing me along. Like, hey, Ryan, you commit to this. You have to, you know, your word. You have to follow through on it.
So teaching work ethic.
Yeah. And you know, and there were times where, you know, they never forced me to do anything. Like, if there was something coming up, like, you know, I wanted to do soccer or this or that, like, they would work it around to where it worked. And then if I was able to do, but all of my siblings, I was the one who stuck to it the most. And then, you know, when I got in my teenage years, that was when my parents started pulling back. And they're like, look, if this is, you're old enough now, this is something, we will help you. And we'll, you know, we will give you as many opportunities as possible. But we're not gonna force you anymore. If you want to do it, you want to do it. If not, then don't do it.
So did you want to be an actor?
Yeah.
Or did you have a fire engine?
I don't know if I ever really thought I wanted to be an actor. It just, I enjoyed doing it. And I didn't really see anything else that I was interested in when I got in my, like, late high school years. And I was on Smallville, and I was watching young actors who are younger than me now, but they were older than me at the time, working on contracts and this and that, negotiating things, and realizing that they do this for a living. Like, they literally support themselves. I lived with my parents at the time, and my mom took me, and, you know, things like that. Like, they legitimately, that was their job. And that was when it, like, clicked in my head, like, oh, I could maybe do this instead of going to college and pursuing being an architect. I don't know, you know, whatever it was at the time.
Because in Smallville, you had virtually a whole episode dedicated to you, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I did on the first season and the second season. But that was like really when I realized I wanted to actually pursue this as something more than just a hobby.
It's not a stable career.
No, not at all.
Are you a risk taker? In life in general? Because I always think of actors as being high risk takers.
I mean, I would say no. A lot of actors are. Mm. Fortunately for me, I grew up doing it. So I had representation. I had agents. I had managers. I had publicists. I had friends out in L.A. It was already a second home. I'd been there multiple years. So for me, the transition into pursuing it full time, or, like, you know, going off on my own, it was already comfortable. It wasn't just like I was giving up on college or moving away from a degree or quitting my job and moving across the country and knowing no one and just showing up and hoping to become famous. You know, it wasn't like that. It was just another stepping stone of something that I was already doing, and I seemed to be pretty good at it when I was younger, and so it was like, makes sense. My parents, you know, would have loved for me to have gone to college, but they weren't terrified because they already had helped me establish a good support system.
Because you became Ben 10 for a movie, didn't you?
Yeah.
You look very Ben 10, actually.
Well, that was the thing. I was shooting another film at the time, and they were trying to get me to audition for this for a while, and I just kept blowing it off because I was working. When you're working, you don't really want to focus on anything else but what you have going on if you're really busy. And they kept trying, and I finally told them, look, guys, I'll try to make it on Friday. After work I'll go, but it's going to be after, you know, casting has just like, a, you know, normal 9 to 5 hours. And I was like, I won't get off until 8 probably. And they're like, don't worry, they'll wait till 8. They'll wait for 8 to see you. 8 o'clock came around, I was still filming. And I was like, called my manager and said, I'm not going to be able to make it. I'm so sorry. I told him apologies, but I'm still filming. And my manager called me right back and said, they're willing to wait till midnight. So if you can get off at midnight, they'll wait. I got pretty close to, I think I was past midnight, and I called them and I was like, look, I can make 12:30 if that's okay, but that's, I ended up, you know, work went way late, and they're like, all right, they'll wait for you. And I went in and I auditioned, and it was terrible. There was no, I didn't have any time to prep. I didn't know my audition like I normally do. Normally you go over the night before, or you have a week or two to prep for it, and you know it like the back of your hand. This was not the case, because I was literally filming up to the minute that I got the sides. And not that it's the craziest of auditions, but there were certain words like Omnitrix or Humongous, or different words that, like, when you're reading it for the first time, you kind of stumble over it, like, what?
You're good now.
Yeah, because I had done it for so long, but I had no idea at the time. And I went in there, and I did probably one of the worst auditions of my life. And I left, and I was like, man, I feel so bad that they waited that long for me to just go in there and not know anything, because I had no idea what the audition was about until I got there. I showed up, and they handed me the sides. Normally you have that before. It was 100% a cold read. And the next day, it was actually a Thursday, because I was working on Friday when I got the call. So the next day, I was at lunch, and my manager called me, and she goes, they loved you. And I was like, what? And I told her the situation. I was like, that had to have been one of the worst auditions ever. And I was like, hold on, I got to go look this up. And I went and looked up Ben 10, and it, like, loaded up on the internet, and it was an image of me as a cartoon character. And I was like, oh, of course. And then, and then I ended up testing for the role, and that was weird, because there were 6 other kids that looked just like me. And I got it, and then the rest was history.
Because you're still recognized, aren't you, a bit for that role?
Sometimes, yeah. I definitely was a lot smaller and younger, and I had a Bieber haircut at the time, as I call it, even though it was before Bieber. People more freak out when they find out I was Ben 10. Like, they'll know me from Teen Wolf, and then they'll find out later that, like, oh, wait, you were Ben 10? I watched, I loved that movie. That sort of thing.
So the audition for Teen Wolf, how did that come about?
Well, I did a movie, Prayers for Bobby, which was directed by Russell McKay, who is executive producer, and he directed a lot of episodes still, like, from Teen Wolf, from the beginning and the end. So I knew about Teen Wolf before I ever auditioned for it. And I auditioned for the role of Scott for season 1. Didn't get it. Wasn't what they were looking for. And I auditioned for a lot of times season 2 for Isaac. And Daniel Sharman got that, rightfully so. And then season 3 came about. And there was a small part for Parrish that I wasn't sure I even wanted to waste. I don't want to say waste my time, but I didn't want to waste my connections on Teen Wolf. Hopefully, you know, something bigger and better was going to come along. So I told my people to pass on it, hoping for something better. And I got a call from Jeff saying, no, you should audition for this role. It's going to expand. So I auditioned on a Friday, and I was working on a Monday.
Because you didn't know that you were going to come in to
be a regular.
I knew the role was going to expand. It wasn't supposed to be Hellhound. He wasn't even supernatural at first. Yeah. Originally, he was human. And they had talks of him being a hunter. And that was the original plan. And that changed, obviously, because of the storylines and people left the show and it didn't quite make sense. And then they made me supernatural, and that turned into a Hellhound. And I have no idea at what point when Jeff actually realized that, but he sort of is the evil genius and had it all work out to what it is today.
So special effects?
Yeah.
Have you ever actually done the burning bit, or have you just, is it CGI?
All CGI, thankfully.
Thankfully,
I don't go near fire. The closest I ever got to fire was when they burned me alive, but I didn't turn into the Hellhound. That was, they put the prosthetics on me. It's 3 hours of makeup. There's all these cracks, and the lava almost of, like, the glowing cracks. Mm. That's actually real. That's prosthetics. It's not CGI. The claws, the fangs, charred, all that, the burns, all that is it's all makeup, special effects makeup. Mm. And the eyes, and then the smoke or fire going around my body is CGI.
So when did the rest of the cast start laughing at you and going, haha, you now have to sit in the chair for 3 hours?
Well, they've all done their own version of it. If I ever complain, Ian has been burned a lot, like full face burn, you know, like mine is charred throughout my body. It wasn't like full face, you know, so he's done some miserable things. In the early days, when they shot in Atlanta, they had way more prosthetics for the werewolf stuff. And also they were shooting out in the cold, and, you know, there's a lot of things where by the time I jumped on Teen Wolf, it was a well-oiled machine and they smoothed some things out. So I couldn't really complain too much because They did some of their own horrors.
Is it harder working in something that's genre based as opposed to just straight acting? I mean, does
no? I think it's more entertaining. I think because the possibilities are endless. I think you can, someone can die on Teen Wolf and come back.
And come back, yeah.
Every day is different. There's always something. If you do a medical show, you're doing medical 24/7. You're not going to do a scene where you're fighting a monster from Mars or something. It's just. In the terms of like supernatural sci-fi, anything is possible. So it makes it super interesting. In my opinion, I really enjoyed, seeing other monsters and special effects or blood or gore or doing creepy things or it's just fun. It makes every day different. Never once did I ever feel like I was filming the same episode. Whereas I'm assuming if I was on a medical show, it wouldn't get boring because obviously there's different storylines. But it's you're always in the hospital. You're always in
scrubs.
The closest thing I can think about is a lot of times I was in the sheriff's station, and I'm not saying I didn't enjoy shooting in the sheriff's station, but it wasn't as interesting as if I was off. Parrish was trying to find dead bodies or getting attacked by a creature, or it's more interesting when there's different possibilities.
But you started your own social media following as well, didn't you, during time on set, sort of giving little hints about what things were happening?
At times, as much as I could. You can't give spoilers away. Yeah. They're not a big fan of that. But yeah, I never even did social media until I got on Teen Wolf. I wasn't a fan of it. But it's a necessary evil. I've learned to appreciate it, and at times it can be fun, but other times it can be a little too intense and sort of not necessarily why I became an actor, but now it's part of the game.
Well, it's part of life. Social media is it.
Yeah.
Advertise yourself on that.
Yeah.
Having to control some of the
shenanigans
that happens on set.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've had a bit of experience here. It's obviously very fun.
Yeah,
working there because
off camera it is. On camera it's business. I always say this. Like everyone always thinks we have tons of pranks, and that's all we do is goof around all day because we're actors and we're big kids that never grew up. And to a certain extent, that's true off camera, like at base camp or when we do conventions like this when we're together and there's no pressure of filming. When you're filming, you're on a schedule and there's millions of dollars on the line, and if you get backed up, it screws up everyone. And you also have a crew of 50 plus people that have families and kids to go home to, and if you're screwing off, you're then making your 10-hour day turn into a 15-hour day, and no one likes that. So there really isn't that much goofing off. It's more of like away from the camera where fun stuff happens, like in base camp, but no one is screwing up the job, because at a certain point it is a job, and if someone is making time on Teen Wolf not as productive, they're going to get fired because it's a business and you have deadlines and you have, if you don't make your day, that means they have to hire certain actors or stunts for another day, and that's a lot of money. So you, for the most part, when we're on camera, we're professional. It's a job, and you can't goof off too much.
Were you aware of the convention scene before? Because you've been on Smallville, you've been in Ben 10. Were you aware of that sort of fandom before you came onto Teen Wolf?
I knew of it. I knew it was a thing. I didn't quite understand it. Not like I've
Were you a
myself.
Fan of anything yourself when you were younger?
I was a fan of. I'm a fan of tons of stuff. I grew up loving like X-Men, Spider-Man.
Comics or real?
TV? Like the cartoons. I was never huge into comics. My brother was. I liked television, which is I think why I like being an actor. I love movies, like they're my favorite. It's my favorite thing in the world, which is where my love for acting comes from. But I knew of conventions and I knew like a little bit about it, but I didn't know exactly what it was, and I had no idea the grand scale of it or how far in the world it traveled. It's intense. It's pretty cool. It's pretty spectacular, actually. The amount of countries you can go to and find fans all over, and people that want to take pictures and autographs, and it's pretty special.
Because sci-fi fantasy is the genre that happens in more than any other thing out there. Do you worry about getting stuck in that genre?
No, if I got stuck in sci-fi for the rest of my life, I'd be happy. I don't, this day and age, typecasting is not necessarily such a thing like it used to be back in the day. People now go from movies to television. That used to be a huge stigma. Now big actors are doing commercials, which used to be a huge stigma.
Or TV shows,
And some of the best, the craziest thing is television used to not be as good as a film. And now some of the television that's out there is better. I mean, Game of Thrones is spectacular. It's epic. It's, it's much bigger than a lot of independent movies. I mean, it's nuts. If I got stuck in sci-fi, it'd be an honor. Like I said, I actually really enjoy it. The possibilities are endless, and going to set every day is never dull, never boring, and the fans are super passionate, which is I think, a plus. I don't think that there's any negative to having fans be more excited about you than the verse. Like, I have friends who are on shows that that aren't sci-fi, and it's awesome, they're working, and it's great, but their fandom is nowhere near anything close to Nemo. They can't even fathom what, you know, if I send out a tweet, what the responses I can get are the crazy, you know, passionate pictures you get back. Like, it's, they don't even touch that. It's not even a thing. So being a part of that is something you sort of take for granted.
And you get to travel the world.
Travel the world. And meet, and, you know, and like people. Comic-Con, which is the, one of the biggest things in the world, in San Diego. You got, like, Game of Thrones. You have whatever new Marvel movie that was trending on Twitter and Instagram. And you have Teen Wolf, which is insane. Nothing else comes close, which is, I mean, it just, that just speaks for the Teen Wolf fandom, how passionate they are, how special and how lucky to have experienced it I am. I mean, it's I don't know if I'll ever experience something like that again. I hope, but if not, at least I got to experience it.
Ryan, thank you for spending time with us.
No, thank you guys.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Hey, this is Christian Kane. I play Jake Stone in The Librarians, and you're listening to Women Talk Sci-Fi.
Well, there you go. That's our werewolf special.
Werewolf special. We've interviewed quite a lot of werewolves over the years.
We have.
Ways, haven't we?
We have, actually.
From sexy ones to real ones. Well, real as in portrayed as real in the television, to the current crop of hot werewolves.
Which has been very pleasant, I must admit.
And I do think the werewolf, if we can look on it in terms of the human psyche, will ever go away, that kind of story, because it's all about the animal within. And therefore, it's a very good way to write about how, from Mr. Jekyll and, you know, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, from that kind of the animalistic thing all the way through. So it's something that's fascinated from written history.
Well, yes, because werewolves have been in our history for centuries, not just the last 100 years. There's always been sort of changing beast somewhere in some people's cultures.
Well, you can go almost go all the way back, and, you know, mythologies of many different cultures out there that actually have people who turn into strange and weird beasts.
Yes.
I think we've got it refined now with it. Wolves are scary, let's put a human inside a wolf body. And there is, as I mentioned before, lots and lots of fiction that is written about werewolves.
There is, and there's always been that whole thing about personalities and people changing on the full moon. I mean, we talk about lunacy, you know, the lunar, which comes from the word lunar, which is in relation to the moon, and it's about that people seem to go crazy around the full moon. You talk about that.
Scientifically, it's inaccurate, but yes, in cultural mythologies, absolutely.
Yeah, well, even from a teaching point of view, you sometimes say, is there a full moon coming?
Yeah, I mean, in some of the work that I've done when I work with people, yes, it's a full moon this week, blah, 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 blah. But yes.
So it's strange how that whole it's still with us, you know, like it hasn't gone away. And shows like Teen Wolf and Twilight, I guess, have brought them up into people's psyche again, compared to, you know, Hammer Horror that used to do a lot during the 40s and 50s and 60s.
Which, and they were pretty awful vampires.
Oh, they were.
Werewolves and vampires, weren't they?
They were, but, you know, they're still
iconic
good to watch.
Go on YouTube and look for some of the early vampire and werewolf representations, and you can see how much they have evolved over the time.
Well, even Doctor Who had werewolf stories in it. David Tennant in particular had a couple of werewolf ones, with Queen Victoria being involved.
That's what, well, the royal family is supposed to be part werewolf, aren't they?
They are, according to Doctor Who.
So interesting to see, interesting to look at. And once again, we hope you enjoy all four interviews.
That's it.
Bye-bye.